Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertletau from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today from Pittsburgh is Jeff Klink. Jeff is the CEO of Klink & Company, and today we're going to be talking about compliance challenges in Asia. Jeff, first, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Adam, it's a pleasure. It's nice to talk to you again.
So let's start with India and the whole Asia Pacific region broad and sort of the red flags. I understand that there's some new red flag issues you're seeing there. What's going on?
Well, I mean, I think in many ways, Adam, the things that we're seeing are kind of a continuum of things we've been seeing for a while in the region. I think, first of all, we're seeing lots of kickback schemes that are plaguing large global manufacturers, typically US and Western Europe manufacturers. You know, kickback schemes are obviously very difficult to identify and to investigate because, you know, you go in and the books and records look fine, the bids are in order in terms of, you know, looking at have bids been made and are there enough bids. But what we're finding is that employees are finding very creative ways, and they're either getting kickbacks from the vendors that they give business to, or what we're seeing more and more, and this is kind of the new twist, is employees are creating fictitious shell companies that appear to be, for example, a maker of goods, when in fact the employees actually own those companies, and those companies actually are not companies at all, but just exist on paper. So that shell company will be used to go out and buy goods in the marketplace. They'll double or triple the price, and then the employees actually end up on both sides of the deal. We're seeing that more and more often.
That's got to be alarming, just because it certainly seems like it would raise questions about companies' ability to vet third parties, which obviously is a critical capacity to have if you want to avoid any kind of FCPA or UK Bribery Act or any other kind of compliance-related failure, no?
Yeah, I think that's right, Adam. And I think the problem is that when you're doing due diligence, and that's probably the primary way to kind of deter this misconduct, if you're not doing things like site visits, confirming that an entity exists and is not really a paper company existing in a studio apartment, which we've seen literally hundreds of thousands of these, you know, you're not going to find those things by doing database research, you know, looking at watch lists and sanctions lists and other more common traditional due diligence. So, yeah, I mean, it's a massive problem. And I have to say the dollar figures involved are, you know, often almost hard to believe. We've seen them in the billions.
Wow. So let's go on two related questions there. One is, are there any warning signs in general that, you know, suggest whether A, you've got some sort of a kickback scheme going, or two, that the business that you're dealing with is really a paper business that, you know, maybe hiding a problematic relation with a government official?
Yeah, I mean, one quick way that is often kind of a red flag is when you find that a vendor is doing a lot of business. Let's say, you know, you look at your accounts payable records and people are, you know, in the top 5-10% of your vendors, and you also find that this vendor is recently registered or formed. That's one way quickly to see, you know, you might have a problem. If you're not doing site visits as part of your diligence, then you know right away that could be a problem. And again, you know, what we counsel our clients is that let's spend the finite compliance dollars where they have the most impact. So let's look at higher risk regions where kickbacks and theft of intellectual property is much more common.
And so, you know, well, actually, let's talk about that for a second while we're on the subject. Is, you know, are there any places where right now you're seeing that these schemes are most rampant?
Yeah, I mean, definitely Asia Pacific, as you had kind of referenced. South America, we're seeing it much more frequently now than we were even a few years ago. I would think, generally speaking, those are the places we're seeing it most frequently. Although, again, it can happen anywhere. It just seems to be prevalent in those regions.
Okay. Now, you mentioned in terms of conducting the due diligence, the importance of site visits, looking out to see how recently an organization that you're doing business with was created. Any other things that people should be focusing on while doing the initial due diligence?
Well, again, and I can't emphasize enough, spend your resources. Compliance is, I wouldn't say, is the most overfunded process in large organizations, right? Compliance has to do a lot with limited dollars. So those dollars need to be spent wisely. So one of the weaknesses that creates kind of the possibility for these things happening is that you're doing the same kinds of diligence on third parties everywhere in the world where you do business. So what we recommend is look at the highest risk regions, Asia Pacific for one, and then spend more resources there. So you may not want to do site visits in Western Europe at present. It may not, I mean, those schemes can certainly occur, but it may not be as common. So if you know that there might be something going on kind of more adversely to the organization in Asia and not, Western Europe, then spend your dollars there and then focus on high dollar vendors if you're going to go out and do site visits.
Good point. So one of the other things that I think this naturally suggests is that you can't just stop your diligence at the time that you hire the company, that there's got to be ongoing auditing and monitoring. Two sort of questions in that vein. One, are you finding that vendors are willing to sign up for ongoing auditing and monitoring? And second, what's the best way to do that to make sure that nothing's changed? I mean, there's nothing, sort of more unfortunate or potentially damaging that you do the due diligence, you find a company is legitimate, it's not necessarily tied to a government official, and then a year later, a government official ends up being a part of the business. Maybe they just joined later and you had no idea. How do you recommend protecting yourself against those things?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that everybody in our space, everyone else that we compete against and our colleagues in compliance offer fairly cost-effective resources to monitor people via databases, right? So you can determine whether, for example, someone suddenly ends up on a watch or sanctions list or is now politically exposed because of a change in ownership. That's a pretty easy way to monitor your ongoing vendors. Changes of ownership is actually a little more complex process because that's not a quick hit necessarily because of the limitations of information. So sometimes that involves local research. It's interesting. I mean, we see clients doing monitoring, daily in some respects. Other folks rerun every third party. As often as 2 and 3 years, they'll do almost a brand new due diligence. So it really depends on the organization. And again, what we recommend is if you're a company that interacts frequently with foreign officials and you have a kind of a risky profile in the business world, you might want to do more frequent monitoring.
Yeah, it sounds like everything else, it should be sort of risk-based.
Yeah, exactly.
Then one other sort of related question. Are vendors starting to understand this process better? Are you seeing that? I mean, I just did a podcast with somebody in the Western Balkans who said their companies are still sort of apprehensive as to why are you asking all these questions about them instead of just, buying their products because they're offered them at a good price. Are you finding that there's more willingness or resistance? And if there is resistance, what's the best way to overcome it?
Well, first of all, I think that's a great point and great issue because, yeah, there are definitely places in the world for often political reasons. Nobody likes Big Brother. If I can provide you with a good or service in a quality way at a good price, why do you want to know about other things? So there is still resistance, and it is not in one place or region, but you're still seeing it. I think it's an evolution. I think as more and more companies do it, you're going to see more acceptance of the process. But I would say it's still in its evolutionary phase. Not everybody's happy to get your questionnaire and, identify their beneficial owners, for example.
And have you found any techniques that are better for overcoming that resistance?
Well, I think that, the organization's personnel need to kind of pave the way for this process and maybe explain to the vendor why they're doing it, what the process is, the purposes of it, the regulatory requirements, kind of mandating it. I think communication is the key from the client, all right? From the organization that's using the third party. They don't know us from anybody, right? So if we send them a vendor questionnaire, identify all these things and explain all these things to us, they don't know who we are. So it's really, I think, very significant for the client to explain the process in detail and make them understand, this is not an invasion of privacy, but it's part of a regulatory obligation that the organizations face.
And then one last question, which is, are there any things that you've come across that often may seem like a red flag, but usually aren't? Something that, can end up spending a lot of time with, but over and over again turns out not to be the big issue people think it is?
Well, I mean, so let's talk about probably the most significant way that organizations find out about problems, and that's through hotline responses. So sometimes I've seen organizations react very kind of aggressively when there's an allegation against someone in the organization relating to something like kickbacks or something more serious. Unless there are lots of specific information in reports. I think those kinds of issues can look like big red flags on, first blush, but often they're not. You don't really find any substance to the allegation. So I think, when you're looking at the question of whether there's a problem, you have to be patient and kind of thoughtful about it, rather than kind of jump to conclusions.
Make your decision based on the investigation, not the allegation, basically.
Right, exactly.
All right. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I think it was very illuminating as to some of the challenges that are still out there and how to prioritize the risk and go about resolving them. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.
Thanks, Adam.